majority of people here in Ireland are going to be staying at home this summer. Holidaymakers here in the country, they are being urged by experts to take precautions against Lyme disease. A lot of people may know what this is, but some people may not. So, Cathy, give us a brief history of what exactly the disease is.
Thank you first for the opportunity today and helping raise the awareness for Lyme disease. And yes, so Lyme disease is a bacterial disease where you get a bite from a tick or a mosquito, and over a period of time where that tick can infect your body, and you could take on multiple different illnesses if not caught in time. You know, it's a bacterial infection. It's caused by a spirochete or a corkscrew-shaped bacteria, and it can affect multiple areas of the body. Now, the tick can be quite small. You know, sometimes it can be the size of a poppy seed, you know, really nymph size, or, you know, the adult can be slightly bigger, but it could take a few days if you are injecting yourself before you would see that this thing has attached onto you.
If you do note yourself or if someone else notes there may be a tick on your skin, how does one go about removing it as safely as possible? Because I have heard obviously people trying to remove ticks before and only getting part of the tick out because they can, I guess, dig in their claws quite quickly.
And I suppose that's it really, is because the mouth of the tick that attaches into the body is barbed. Right, so it really gets stuck in and it's quite difficult to remove it. And, you know, a lot of people will have come to us and say, hey, we painted the tick with nail polish or put petroleum jelly on it or burnt it off. Definitely don't do any of those things. It actually aggravates because all the poison, as we call it, is in the belly of the tick. So the fat part that you'd be squeezing to try and pull out or to aggravate, and that's just pushing more of it into the body. So we tell people, do not do that. You know, if possible, and people sometimes don't do this, is if you could take a photograph, number one, to show, okay, here's a tick, at least you can note that this is where it was. When you're removing it, you can use a thin tweezers, grasp the tick as close to the skin, not on the body, but as close to the skin, and pull it upwards with an even steady pressure. You know, you don't twist or jerk, as the mouth part may become detached and remain in the skin, and that's where sometimes people say it'll break off and they need to try and then try to dig that out. You know, there is tick tweezers out there. I've seen them in the chemist, a lot of pharmacies have them. And they come in two different sizes, and that's often handy to have in your wallet as well or in your car, you know, and it's a lot easier to try and get them out because you mightn't have a tweezers with you. But when you take them off, you know, I would always say, you know, put it in a plastic bag, put the date on it, store it in the freezer. You can send that tick to be tested, and then you'll have ease of mind to know, hey, does a tick have Lyme disease or any of the other infections that it carries?
Okay.
And you'd know then to get treatment, or you could watch for the symptoms and then go for treatment and have the tick and send it off to be tested then. But, you know, wash the area, you know, put a bit of antiseptic cream on it, wash your hands, of course, after removing the tick.
Cathy, just to touch on the symptoms there, I believe there can be up to 73 symptoms as of now associated with Lyme disease. So it's a difficult one for both yourself and medical practitioners to put their finger on.
Very difficult. You know, Lyme disease is known as the great imitator because, you know, it can cause many different illnesses, and you know, which is difficult to diagnose. You know, chronic fatigue, Parkinson's, depression, motor neuron disease, menopausal symptoms, arthritis, depression. You know, there's many symptoms associated. Bell's palsy, a lot of people find it can affect the nervous system, it can affect memory function, irregular heartbeat, you know, dizziness and severe fatigue, but that's, you know, later on in the early stages. So if you got bitten in the early stages, It's flu-like symptoms, you know, chills and fever. So if you got a flu in 2 weeks' time, you know, and you were bitten, and then you decide, you know, you see these symptoms coming on, you know, and headaches, muscle aches, joint pain, you know, just generally unwell, but it's out of kind of season. It's not normal to feel that sick around, you know, this time of the year, and you're kind of saying, oh, you know, I got bitten 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. You know, then that's where you'd be starting to say, okay, you know, I need to go and talk to my doctor here. I did get bitten 2 weeks ago when I was wherever, and now I'm having these symptoms. You know,
Kathy,
not everybody gets the bullseye rash that people talk about, and that's something, you know, if you don't get the bullseye rash, it doesn't mean you didn't get Lyme disease. You could be one of those that don't get the rash, but you get the symptoms.
And Kathy, where is an individual most at risk? I'm not trying to scare anybody in particular, just, you know, to be aware and alert, I guess.
You know, there's ticks everywhere in Ireland. You know, it's not just one, whether it's Cork or Kerry or Limerick. They're everywhere. You know, they're in our parks. They're because the birds, you know, travel from county to county, and they can carry them. You know, there's deers in a lot of counties. There's animals. You can pick up ticks anywhere, and that's where people say, oh, I was in a local park, I got bitten, there's no ticks in the park. There's ticks everywhere, and it's just being more mindful. And you know what I'd say, and my advice is, you know, people put on sun cream when the sun is out, and we're so conscious of the sun and what it can do to our skin. You know, use repellent in the same kind of mindset. You know, wear the repellent, check yourself when you're coming back to your car and before you're getting back in, you know, wash yourself down. If you have kids with you, most places kids will get it is in the neck, the ears, down along the torso, because they're lying on the grass, you know, the back of the knees, and they just, you know, sometimes they're so young they don't check. But it's just a quick scan and just say, right, check the inside of the ear, especially with kids, because they're lying down and they go in there. And the back of the neck. For adults, you know, usually it's the legs, the torso, especially if they're hill walkers or hikers. And it's just, you know, get into that mindset of checking yourself. If you have dogs and you have them out walking and they're free walking, before you put them back into the car, brush them down, put them into the car, because that tick can go into your car and he can stay there. For a time, or they can come into your house when they fall off animals. So, you know, it's just being mindful. It's not to scare anybody here. It's just, you know, just a few simple checks, and you could save yourself from getting Lyme disease, or somebody else in your house getting Lyme disease.
And if somebody is diagnosed and they want support and want to get in touch with yourselves at TikTok Ireland, how do they go about doing so?
So we do have a website, www.tiktokireland.org. There is a Facebook page, which is TikTok Ireland. There's also other groups around Ireland. There's Lyme Northwest, there's Lyme Chat Era. You know, there's a lot of support groups out there. You know, none of us are medical, but all of us either have had Lyme disease or have a family member with Lyme disease. So we're not there to say, hey, you know, this is what you need. It's giving them advice where to go. If people are saying, you know, I have pains in my muscles and I'm, you know, what support can they get would help them today, or get support from other people that have been through it and out the other end. That's really what it's about.
Well, Kathy Ford, spokesperson for TikTok Ireland, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
And that was Kildare Focus producer Ciara Noble. Now, Pat Costello is out and about throughout County Kildare as the build-up continues to Sunday's Titanic meeting of Kildare and Dublin. Pat, where are you right now?
Well, we're in Clane on day two of the Get Flags Up, Ciara. And we're talking to two prominent Kildare people, prominent Clane people, prominent GA people. First of all, we have Dave Cahill, who's the county PRO, used to be the PRO here. And we have a man who's, they call Paul Gaza Dunn. We'll have to find out where he got the Gaza, or the Gaza over in the UK, copy him. Dave Cahill, it's a quiet week for you. You only have the Division 2 final tomorrow night. You have a hurling final final and Division 1 final on Saturday, and then you have the big match on Sunday, and then you have the minor final on Monday. Quite a week for you, Dave.
Yeah, it's all systems go, Pat, but it's great to be able to get the fixtures from last year complete, and also the minor fixtures, the leagues are up and running from this year as well. So, look, I think there's somebody mentioned to me there last week, 800 games already played from Born and Oak up to senior over 6 weeks. That's some achievement, and fair play to the CCC and Born and Oak committees for getting that over the line. Like, yeah, it's an absolute testament to them.
You used to be the county secretary in Kildare. Obviously, tickets were across your desk at all times at that stage. No tickets anymore. You don't have to worry about them, at least.
No, don't worry about that now. It's just a different job now, different skills, different pressures or whatever, but look, we'll meet them as they come along. So look, it's all good at the minute, and we're all looking forward to Sunday. So we are.
That's Dave Cahill, who is the county PRO. Dave, we'll probably see loads of social media stuff coming up very, very soon. Now, Paul Gaza Dunn. Where did the Gaza come from, Paul? Paul, Ciara, just before you go, Paul played for Kildare as a minor back in 1989.
And, you get a clip in the ear for that, Pat.
Oh, yeah, well, he's a big fella, and I'm cowering away, indeed. He did play for Kildare Minors in 1989, along with Len Ryan and others, and beaten in the final by Offaly.
Yeah, beaten by Offaly there in 1989, yeah, so long ago now, but great memories there, playing with all them players, Luxor and Glen Ryan, Andy Rainbow, Ronan Quinn, Ian Smith and all them boys, Philip Casey and that. It was great days, it was great days for us, you know. Well,
there are new kids on the block now from Clane. You have Brian McLaughlin, and there, a few people appreciating we're here. You have Brian McLaughlin, you have Chris Byrne, and you have Shane O'Sullivan. You would have had them, you're heavily involved with the Cool Camps, you would have had them on Cool Camps here in Clane.
Absolutely, look, they're great young fellas there, and there's more like them in the club now. They come in when they were growing up there in the club, they were always there to give a handout. They helped out with the summer camps, and they've grown and grown and grown, and now sponsored by Sports Direct. But Shane and Chris and Mackie there, they always, that's what they would have been coming back, giving back to the club, helping out with the kids in the Cool Camps, and they're dedicated to their football. They're up on the pitch there 7 days a week training, and it's a credit to be in there giving everything for Kildare now, representing Clane. It's just brilliant, you know.
Yeah, and we're talking to Mackie's dad there a few moments ago. He looks a bit relaxed already as he went for his walk. Clane, it's, you know, gave Kildare the white jersey, but you know, you continue to progress as a club, and you've plenty of things coming up.
It's absolutely brilliant at the moment. The numbers we have in the club, we've over 70 teams, we've over 1,000 members there. Clane were in Division 2 for the last 5 years. Things are evolving now in Clane. We've great coaches in, we've a lot of work going on there with the coaches and that, and the numbers. Clane are now in the Division 1 final tomorrow, or Division 2 final tomorrow night. They're in Division 1 next year. They've a lot of lads there. They could be playing county. They're not there yet, but they will get there. A lot of them minor teams players are coming through now. From under 15 down, we've 30 players or more with each team. The underage is good. The community is building the whole time, and it's a great outlet for parents to have their kids playing in playing sport in Clane GA. We've four courts: hurling, Gaelic, Camogie, and ladies football there. It's just brilliant, you know. One club.
Will somebody take that battery out, for God's sake.
This is a 2-hour show, I believe, Pat.
And of course you have two lads on, Tom Cribben and Brian Murphy, on the backroom team as well.
Absolutely, yeah, it's great. Look, at Tom Cribben is a wealth of experience, and Brian Murphy, who put the ball in against Meade. You know, two great Clane men there in helping. Great to see the three lads in there as well. They'll help Jack out. Jack is a wealth of experience. It's absolutely brilliant. And also going on in Clane GA at the moment, so we have our development of the pitches. Something we never had for years is to play floodlit matches. We have a lovely sand-based pitch there. It just got seeded the other day. It'll be ready next year. We're doing loads of sponsorship there. We're looking for, we have a big golf classic coming up. We're looking for anyone like to come in and sponsor us on August the 27th. We're trying to build a walkway and lights to go with this all-weather sand-based pitch. It's fabulous facilities for the future of Clane. So if anyone's out there and they want to play in the Golf Classic 27 or make any donations, please get involved and contact us.
Well, a few more interviews like that and we won't find the winter coming in, indeed. Anyway. Yeah, Lord. That's enough from him, anyway. We did mention a wedding. There's a wedding going on here. We're just outside the church. And let's say a quick hello to the bride and groom. That's Andrea and John. They're getting married. Their kids are here as well. Christian, I think it is, and Sean. And that comes in from Mary and Anthony. I'm getting out of here before these fellas are me demented. I'm heading to Salins.
We'll check back in with you a little bit later, Pat. And every happiness to Andrea and John on their wedding day. I'm joined now on the line by a very patient Dr. Una May. She's Director of Participation at Sport Ireland. Thank you for joining us, Una.
You're very welcome. Yep, it's always good to hear that kind of level of enthusiasm.
Isn't it, though?
Involving sport.
Absolutely. And I think we've been spoiled the last couple of days, and long may that continue.
Yeah, definitely. It's the way to go for us all.
We're here to absolutely to talk about sport participation, participation in activity, but doing so in a really safe and vigilant way. And we've had a devastating week and a half or 10 days, certainly on Ireland's water courses and coastlines. 9 people have died. And you at Sport Ireland, Una, are urging people to take every precaution possible, but enjoy Ireland's summer such as it is today.
Yeah, exactly. Look, you know, the outdoors has really helped all of us to get through these last year and a half, I think. And so we're very keen to encourage people on an ongoing basis to enjoy the outdoors. But, you know, we don't want that to be at the expense of people's safety. So we partnered up with all the state agencies, government departments and national governing bodies of sport who have a specific interest in water safety. And we've all agreed some very common, simple, sensible messages around water safety to try and encourage people to enjoy, but enjoy safely, and take the basic precautions, checking the weather, the water conditions, tides, knowing, letting someone know where you're going, not going out alone, using an appropriate buoyancy aid or life jacket depending on the activity, ensuring they're visible in the water. You know, people who are going out swimming, you know, the open water swimming has become so popular, which is great news for us, but it does again require people to be careful. And the main thing is, especially things like around holiday weekends like we have coming up, is that people don't use inflatable toys in open water. They're really designed for swimming pools and for that kind of fun. But ultimately the key is that people know who to go and what to do in case of an emergency and where to call for help. So the big message is that people would call 112 or 999 and ask for the Coast Guard in the event of an emergency. And I think from our point of view is to, if people are going to be active, and particularly if they're swimming, that they go to safe places, places that are either have lifeguards on duty that are designated swimming areas or the traditional swimming areas where they know that the other people and where people have historically swimmed for years.
That's a really key point, because clearly here in Kildare we're a landlocked county, but we're riven with water. We have 3 reservoirs, which nobody is supposed to swim in, but we all know they do. Yeah. 2 large rivers in the Barrow and the Liffey, numerous tributary rivers, fast-flowing streams, and 2 canals. Some of those will have traditional bathing areas going back donkey's years, and with others, Una, you're just taking your life into your hands if you choose to bathe there when nobody else is around.
That's exactly. And people, look, sometimes when the weather gets good, people are desperate to get a bit of water and to get that lovely splash and the sound of the water and the feeling of being in the water, but it's just not worth it if it's not a safe area. And as a general rule, these are marked as not safe, and I think as you made the point around the reservoirs, look, it's very tempting, but it's not safe, and there's a reason why those signs are up to stop people from swimming. So we really do encourage people, and as I said, if all else fails, at least to go somewhere that there's a history of people being active and swimming, and you know, where we know that there maybe isn't as strong a likelihood of any risks associated with those areas. But it is about, yes, being sensible. And I think what's really important is that parents take a bit of responsibility, educate their children. And, you know, this particular campaign that we're involved with is about a collaboration with all those key partners. But from our point of view, a lot of our partners are the national governing bodies of sport and the local sports partnership. And they all provide, you know, any of the water sports governing bodies, canoeing, surfing, swimming, they all have really, really good tips and advice on their websites and access to courses and programs and initiatives, things that are done as part of an organised activity, which makes it so much safer.
And will contribute to reducing risk to an absolute minimum. Of course, when you're getting into the water, you can't eliminate it entirely, which is why vigilance is key.
Exactly. And that's why following the basic guidelines and the basic tips that I outlined there and that are available, you know, they are the minimum anyone should be doing in order to try and reduce and minimise the risks they expose themselves to, and their kids and their families. That's the worst part, you know.
Well, Dr. Una May, Director of Participation at Sport Ireland, thank you indeed for joining us. Poetry Ireland has launched the Poetry Town initiative today, and one county, Kildare, is included in it. It's a brand new initiative. This is the inaugural naming of towns, and I'm joined on the line to discuss this by the Director of Poetry Ireland, Niamh O'Donnell. Niamh, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
And we're delighted to have you, particularly as Naas, the county town of Kildare, is one of these 20 poetry towns. Tell us a little about the thinking behind creating poetry towns.
Okay, so Poetry Town is an initiative between Poetry Ireland and the local authority arts offices in each county. So run it. And have
Niamh, if you might just move around, your line is dropping out a little bit, and we'd love to be able to hear everything you want to share with us.
Absolutely sorry about that.
That's great. That you were saying, yes, it is.
20 counties are involved, and we're really delighted to have Naas as Kildare's town for this year.
And how did you select which towns?
So we worked with the local arts officers in each county, and just thinking about what exists in the town, what local community groups and arts groups are in the town, then we made a selection. It's very difficult, honestly, to pick, so we're really hoping that we'll move around each year with different towns in each county.
And what does it mean for the cultural life of the town that any of the given 20 that you've selected?
So, really, what the first thing we're going to do is we're going to appoint a laureate in the town, a poet laureate. And what we'll also be doing is rolling out a huge number of different initiatives like workshops, classes, maybe a school's competition. And also we're going to have poetry that moves you, which will be activities where it will either be a walk with poetry or a run. And in fact, I think in one county we may even have yoga with poetry.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
Well, what we're really hoping is we engage as many people as possible in sort of breaking down the barriers to poetry, bringing it to more people, hearing different voices, really kind of focusing, you know, pulling away from major urban areas and really celebrating the individuality of each town and the communities within them.
I know that certainly in Kildare you're working very closely with Kildare County Council's Arts Office, which is an incredibly vibrant and innovative arts office. How will Poetry Ireland and Kildare County Council's Arts Office select the Poet Laureate? Because that's going to be a tough gig.
A very difficult decision. We've also of county libraries and the library services, and we've had a number of names from the town itself or have a very close connection to the town.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think we're going to have to bring that interview prematurely to a close because Niamh's line just isn't holding up to what the standard that we would like, and we would love for you all to be able to hear precisely what she says. All of the details of Naas's appointment as one of Ireland's 20 inaugural poetry towns are available on the local news section of kfmradio.com. Maybe surprised to know that despite the astronomical demand last year, and it probably continues well into this year, for dogs, 171 were destroyed in Irish pounds in 2020, and some 5,000 dogs were either surrendered to pounds last year or found their ways there. Joined now to discuss this by Ciara Byrne, she's Head of Communications at Dogs Trust. Ciara, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi, and thanks for having me on today.
Delighted to do so. Now, that figure of 171, it seems really, really remarkable when you look at the astronomical prices people were paying for dogs hither, thither and yon across the country. But that figure in and of itself is a huge drop on the previous year.
It is, yeah. I mean, we definitely did see a big drop in these numbers in the 2020 statistics. But we do really need to be cautious of these numbers because they're not really an accurate reflection. There are a number of different reasons for that. So first of all, obviously, it was an unprecedented time in 2020. So that's going to reduce the number of dogs going into the pound. Mm. And therefore, it is going to reduce naturally the number of dogs destroyed in Irish pounds as well. But then there's also factors that we have to take into consideration, like 45% of dogs in the pound were transferred to animal welfare organisations like ourselves at Dogs Trust. So that would mean that the euthanasia rate would be much higher without those organisations like us and others around the country helping the dogs out of the pounds.
But there seems to be a several thousand dogs missing from that arithmetic, because if there were 5,200 dogs entered the Irish pound system last year and around 45% of them, Ciara, are transferred to Dogs Trust and its sister organisations who do incredible work around the country, and only 171, yeah, and I use that term very advisedly, only 171 were destroyed. Where are the others?
Well, a lot of the time, the pounds will rehome them directly as okay. well. So, people can take a dog directly from the pound. They don't necessarily need to go through another animal welfare organisation. But a lot of the time, it is better for the dog to come through an animal welfare organisation like Dogs Trust, where we have a lot of rehabilitation there and training and behaviour advice and that kind of support that you'll get at a rescue centre, as opposed to the pound, where you might not get as much follow-up support.
And I would imagine that even with the best will in the world, there will always be some dogs destroyed at pounds every year because of their state of health or well-being.
Yeah, well, what we do at Dogs Trust, we have a two-prong approach to our work, and a lot of our work is preventative measures to stop these dogs ending up in the pounds in the first place. And there's a lot of different reasons that a dog can end up in the pound system, and sometimes it's behaviour related, and that's what an awful lot of the time that we're seeing, especially at the moment. And it's, when I say behaviour related, I mean it's such a broad spectrum. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can be from as something as small as a dog not being socialised properly, and when I say small, I mean that's a big issue for dogs, because it can stem into bigger behavioural issues. So dogs that might not get that socialisation, that could have separation anxiety, and we see an awful lot of those dogs that are just become difficult to handle for their owners, and might be that they're not properly toilet trained, and they're just more difficult to have in the house than other dogs. So, you know, sometimes it's as simple as that, some basic training that's needed. And, you know, a lot of the time, that's all it is. But, you know, and then other times there are dogs that, you know, might have more extensive traumatic related behaviour. Mm-hmm. And where they may have been abandoned, they may have been roaming the streets for however long, they might not have been cared for, looked after, and had those basic needs met. And dogs are such adorable social creatures that, you know, we can often take that for granted. You know, a dog, like a human, needs that nourishment, needs that love, needs that care to become a really well-rounded dog. And if a dog misses out on that, especially and particularly in its early stages of life, it can have detrimental effects for the dog down the road, and that's where we see them ending up in the pound system, unfortunately.
And we're beginning to see the impact of the waning of the day-to-day impact of the pandemic on people's lives, in that you've seen a massive surge in the number of surrendered dogs, which I think Dogs Trust and other related organisations have long been foretelling, given the huge spike in dog ownership at the beginning of the first lockdown.
Yes, absolutely. And it's really become apparent now, especially in the last 3 months, where we've seen restrictions easing. People are going back to work. People are going back to their normal busy lives, going shopping, you know, retail outlets opening up. And all of that means that you're going to be out of the house more. It also means that other people that may not have visited your house over the last year and a half will be coming into your house. And your dogs have gotten used to that. So what we've seen now is a massive spike. We've seen a 212% increase in surrender requests in the last 3 months alone. And that's just at Dogs Trust. So what we're seeing is that a lot of people are looking to surrender their dogs. And the biggest issue that we're seeing is behaviour-related issues, where the dog, you know, might have separation issues or all of those type of things that can stem from suddenly going from one environment to a completely separate, a completely different environment that they weren't expecting. So we're now seeing a lot of those dogs coming through our doors, and we did expect it, we did anticipate it, and we've a big campaign that we've recently launched called Life After Lockdown, Bark to Basics, and that's where we're offering, we're giving away free interactive packs for people with lots of practical tips and advice to help transition your dog out of lockdown, get them slowly used to spending more time on their own. So, you know, you can visit our website to sign up for one of those free packs. But it's things like that we did anticipate, and we're trying our best to help those people that might, you know, that might be able to help their dog stay in the home. And we don't want to see that happening, you know.
Well, Ciara Byrne, Head of Communications at Dogs Trust, thank you indeed for joining us. Where are you now, Pat?
Oh, well, now, after the mayhem that was playing on Paul Gaza, I forgot to ask him where he got the name Gaza and all the mayhem, but we're now in the tranquil surrounds of the waterways in Salins, and it's very, very tranquil indeed. We're hoping to meet a man who knows a famous man, and I'm told he'll be here in a minute or two. That's Mick Corley, who is a very, very good friend of Paul Mescal. Do you remember Paul Mescal?
I do indeed, yeah.
Yeah, he played minor football for Kildare. Don't know what else he did, I'm not so sure, and he captained them as well. But we're out and about, as I say, Ciara. The theme of our tour of the county is, get the flags up, because unfortunately, unlike 98, unlike 2000, the flags are not up in Kildare this afternoon, this week, whatever it is, in the lead up to the Leinster final. But hopefully people will start getting them out, businesses will start getting them out, because that's what the players need. They're there every night, every two, three, four nights a week. They have been there since last October initially, and now since about March or so, training very hard. They're representing the county, they're representing the clubs, they're representing those who are involved in the clubs, they're representing their parishes as well. So if we could get the flags out, just create a bit of a buzz. And in fairness to Paul Gaza Dunn in Clane, he certainly created an atmosphere, because there were tooting horns, people were stopping, we could see people turning on KFM to see what was going on. They thought there were about a million people there, and the way he was talking, he'd be sending a million people away. But apart from that, he's a huge supporter of everything to do with Clane, a mighty man. And if we could get Tom Corley here in a few moments, we will talk to him. But I have to say, you know, the Kildare players have been putting it in when 98 and in 2000 when Kildare won. Imagine, there's 21 years since Kildare won a Leinster title. They won it in 98, and that was 1956, was the previous time they had won it. So the Delaney Cup doesn't often appear on the banks of the Liffey, on the banks of the two canals in Kildare. But hopefully maybe on Sunday, we're hearing lots of rumours and comments about who will play for Kildare. Obviously there's big doubts about Kevin Feely, there are big doubts about Owen Doyle, and obviously Paul Cribben is out as well. But we'll have to wait and see. Jack O'Connor and his backroom team, they're the men who will decide who will play on Sunday, and we'll hear who will be playing, probably not tonight, probably, but maybe definitely tomorrow night, and then we will be broadcasting it here and letting everybody know on KFM who is playing where and what might happen. But it looks like I have been let down by Tom Corley. I'm very disappointed, Tom, that you didn't appear.
Give him a stern talking to.
I will indeed. But he is, in fairness to him, he is a big, big friend of Paul Mescal. Mick would have been, part of the Kildare backroom team when Paul Mescal was playing, and they keep very, very much in touch indeed. So, anyway, what's happening for the rest of the afternoon? Well, I will be in Naas all afternoon. We'll be doing links up with Ben at 3:15, 3:45, and we'll wrap it all up around 4:15 with Paul. And sure, if we see Mick Curley on the way somewhere, we will say hello to Mick as well. You never know what might happen. And if Paul Mescal, if you're listening, Paul, we'll ask you to play a request as well.
Thanks a million, Pat. Now, restaurants are asking government to intervene following a massive wave of online abuse over the use of vaccination certs for indoor dining. Some eateries say they've been flooded with fake bookings and negative reviews and comments on both Google and Facebook. To discuss this, I'm joined on the line by Vice President of the Restaurants Association of Ireland and also owner and operator of Hearts Kildare, Firecastle here in Kildare, the Dewdrop Inn and the Brew House in Kill, as well as Ashton's in Clonskee. Paul, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Ciara. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I'm at a loss as to explain why people are choosing to do this, because you may hold with the concept of the vaccination cert required for indoor dining. You may not hold with it, and that's kind of neither here nor there. If you want to dine indoors, this is what you have to do. But I don't understand why there's such a concerted campaign to punish the restaurateurs who have no option but to engage with that digital cert or not open at all.
Exactly, and look, I think the first thing if we don't open, we're not entitled to any more of our CRSS grants. So, you know, we want to get back in. We really have no choice. We've all our staff that have been sitting off long enough, and everybody is excited to be back. But then to be hit with this wave of abuse and nearly these hate messages that are coming through online, we've been victim of it ourselves in all the places, especially Hearts last weekend when we announced that we weren't opening for the previous weekend. Before the 19th.
And what are people saying to you, Paul?
look, there's a lot of stuff I wouldn't even respond. I couldn't even say on air. To be honest, as I say, when I say hateful, I can. Like, it's really, really, really bad. And it's just horrible to read. It's horrible for the staff that you rely on to make the post for you. Some of your managers that are in charge of your social media, and then they're been affected because they think they're doing something horrendous wrong to your business. When at the same time you're trying to console them and say, look, this is a certain faction of people out there, obviously, that we're possibly never going to eat indoors anyway. You don't know how many of them would be actually valid customers. But
in the ordinary course of events, would be customers of yours anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I can understand to a point, but there's no need to voice the hate. It's not even the messages coming through online aren't, would you not reconsider? We don't agree. Would you consider doing this? Or would this not be a better stand? It's not. It's just straight hate. It's straight, it's abuse. It's, you know, we will never, please boycott this restaurant. We will never eat in your restaurant again. You know, it's been an awful 10 days since we put our post out last Saturday. Hence, we have this week, even though we've opened up our business, we've been very quiet on social media just because of the backlash beforehand.
And surely the people who are spewing that hate and bile towards you, your staff and your colleagues in many parts of the country should be really directing their ire to those who set up the protocols for indoor dining, not those who have to administer them.
Look, exactly. I mean, why they're coming to us, there's very little we can do. They must understand that we're business people at the end of the day. We need to have our business open. I said, we can't protest against the government for not opening and then not be in receipt of our grants that we're relying on at the moment. So we were faced with no position just but to open. And, you know, a lot of my colleagues out there have decided to remain closed for indoor dining because they have in certain places huge outdoor areas, so at the moment it suits them to be outside. But I mean, we all know that come September that won't be the point. Everybody's going to have to try and move indoors.
And the verbal abuse or the written abuse on social media is just one aspect of what you're facing. Other of your members, Paul, are being flooded either with numerous bookings or block bookings where people have absolutely no intention of showing up, and then there's negative reviews on relevant review sites.
Yeah. Certainly we've seen the reviews coming in, all right, and the ones especially on Facebook where you don't recommend this property. I suppose we're lucky that we have a software at the back end of all our systems that takes credit card now for details, something we implemented 2 Christmases ago when we started to get bookings that were coming in for tables of 10 and only a 6 would arrive in. So I suppose we got ahead of ourselves back then. So we've been able to roll that out and still look for credit card details and booking deposits from people making online bookings. But there's an awful lot of restaurants don't have those facilities available to them. So if people can make a booking and they're not asked for credit card details, then they can easily book for a table of 12. I would just ask all our colleagues out there just to make sure you take valid credit card details and really process the payment.
And I know that the RAI is asking for government intervention in this. What in real terms can it do, though?
I suppose that's the million-dollar question. I mean, they can only engage with the social media companies to see if they can do anything, but I'd say it's going to be very hard to filter that kind of abuse that's coming through. You know, you block one user, another one will show up and block another, same again. So, look, I know they have they should ask, and something needs to be done, but I can't see, I don't know where or what could be done.
And I would imagine that the Facebook and or Google are not particularly minded to act on this kind of commentary because they have rules around hate speech, etc. And they would probably make the adjudication that this type of language, this type of post, does not fall between those two stools.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of the messages are directly at the restaurant. So they're going to their immediate inboxes, where I suppose if the restaurant engages with them on the platform in an open feed, then that's where you can actually see it. But a lot of it is just coming in house. You know what I mean? A lot of that message that you're getting, or the message that you have put up, has been screenshot and then shared around. So it's not, you know, I suppose that's how they're getting away with it. That's not direct at you.
I'd be interested to see what action government may elect to take on this. As always, Paul Lenehan, Vice President of the Restaurants Association of Ireland, thank you indeed for joining us. Also, a prominent Kildare restaurateur.